Any effort to bring in more food is absolutely necessary, but anything that comes in now, it's too little too late. And the reason we've come to this point is because of Israel's obstruction. And to see that written in a report, a joint report from the State Department and the Department of Defense to Congress is ludicrous. And I was just...
Stacey, we just have 30 seconds. Your final message to President Biden.
Do the right thing. Listen to your experts. Do the right thing. It is difficult, but it is necessary because what we've done up to now has not worked for anyone. It doesn't help Israel. It doesn't help
the people of Gaza. And what is the right thing in this last 10 seconds?
The right thing is to acknowledge Israel is blocking humanitarian assistance, and there are consequences of that. And the consequences affect our military sales.
Stacey Gilbert, we thank you so much. Former senior civil military advisor in the State Department has just resigned. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to KVOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area and all over the world at kvoo.fm.
Hello, my name is TK Kapurai and I'm an immigrant from Zimbabwe. I'm the host of The Global Cell, which airs live in the air room the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. I host immigrants and refugees from various global spots. I like to bring out their lived experiences so the world can know something about them. I like to bring a lot through my guests so we may have diverse experiences, cultures, foods, music, interests, and anything on the platform. We can share and learn a lot through their live instructions. Let's do this together, not only for a better platform for our community, but a better community for our platform. Again, tune in for my show, The Global Cell, live in the air room, the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and also available on the web at kboo.fm.
Listening to The Gap on KBOO Portland. My name is Althea Billings. I'm your sole host this morning, regrettably, and I also want to let people know that this is a pre-recorded episode of The Gap, not something we normally do here at 8 a.m. on Fridays. Today's episode, I got two really interesting chunks for you. First off, we're going to be looking back to look forward, really, on something that happened on our Women's Day show. Take a listen. Well, with the Women's Day in mind...
What are we doing? Are we being hysterical? What's going on?
I can't... Okay, all right. For our community question, who's an important woman in your life? Who's... We want to talk about the women that shaped you. Mm. Who comes to mind?
Well, obviously, my mom is a big, you know...
Shout out to my mom.
Shout out to mom. My mom, your mom, moms.
Yeah.
My grandma Rose, she was a big part of my life, basically raised me. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to also think of like all the women that I've met throughout my, because you know, you look at like, I don't know, for me at least, I look at my friends, people my age, and I don't look at them as like a woman who, so it's just like my friend, you know?
Yeah.
But definitely as you grow up and you see your friends becoming like moms or, you know, just like kicking butt in work stuff or, mm-hmm. you know, getting PhDs or something. You're like, whoa, that's like, you're a girl and you did that. That's pretty
that's
awesome.
That's kind of tough.
Yeah, that's really hard. How did you do that?
Yeah.
So definitely a lot of inspiration for people around me.
Mm-hmm.
I never really had any role models that were like,
You didn't like look
family.
At a poster.
No, yeah,
and
never.
Say, I'm going to be that. Yeah. No, I feel the same way. I mean, yeah, definitely my mom, my grandmas, my sisters.
Boom.
Shout out to my sisters.
Recently, I was in a situation where I was feeling really low, and there was this lady, and I went to get like a, you know, some street food, and she hands me my food, and she's just like so cheeky and funny, and she was like, you know, we got to talking, and she, I think she was like 72 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And she was, you know, religious. She had like a religious garb on, but she was so funny and mm-hmm. so cheeky and so like, I'm like, I work in nonprofit. She's like, oh, I won't hold it against you. Like that's, you know,
hilarious.
And hilarious, right? And I was feeling really low. And at that moment, I felt this kind of like, this woman, you know, had a light that she was able to like shine onto me and light my flame up again.
Yeah.
Or like pour into me in a way that felt like she didn't, you know, and we have so many like things right. that are different between us. And yet she just like maybe felt it. And I don't know, it makes me think of like the type of advice that you get from women in your life. And there's this quote, I'll do it real quick.
Yeah, please.
Advice is a form of nostalgia. Dispensing it is a way of fishing the past from the disposal, wiping it off, painting over the ugly parts and recycling it for more than it's worth.
I like that.
I always love advice from you know, elders. I mean, even just people who are like, you know, just been through something that you've been through. They don't even have to be older than you. They can just have experienced something or see you going through something. So, I think of like teachers and whenever I was struggling and they see that you're struggling and they just want to like...
They pour into you, you know? Yeah, pouring into another. I love that.
Oh, I think we have Bob on the line. How are you?
Hi, Bob.
Hey, good morning, Tammy and Althea, right?
Yes. Yep. Hey, how you doing?
How are
you?
Good. It's me, Bob. Hey, good morning. I want to give a big shout out to Women's International Month and one of the very important women in my life, besides my wonderful wife, talking about a business owner of 17 years. She owned and operated the black coffee shop, an African-American coffee shop in Portland called Reflections Coffee Shop. And her name is Gloria McMurtry.
Well, there it is. What's Gloria the name of the coffee? Reflections, right?
Yeah, Reflections Coffee Shop right there on Killingsworth and MLK Jr. Boulevard. And it was a coffee shop and bookstore.
Okay.
And let me tell you, Sister Gloria, she was from Detroit. And she wasn't, you know, she had a little edge to her, of course, as a business person. You have a little edge to you. You can't be all hugs and kisses. So, you know, I worked for her for 2 years off and on, 1 year here, 1 year there. And one of her favorite things, she would always tell you, yeah, I ain't from here. I'm from Detroit.
Mm.
It was always cool when she said that. We knew she was in a mood. And she still with us. She's still alive. She gets a shout out. I went to her 80th birthday party a year ago. The people out there, Reflections Coffee and Book Shop, it's not there anymore. It was there for 17 years. It was the mecca of the black community. Gloria McMurtry from Detroit. Big shout out.
Shout out.
Shout out. Thank you. That. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate it, Reggae Bob.
International Women's Day. Business.
Boom, there it is. This is making me think. You reminded me. My next door neighbor, as I walk the dog, we've become close friends. She's really nice. Shirley Nanette is her name.
Mm.
Outstanding singer. She sang at the Kennedy Center, I believe.
What?
Yeah. Old school Portland. Old school.
Mm-hmm.
And she has one of her granddaughters also is on Cats, I think, or something. Or she was touring with Cats. Huge musical family.
Wow.
Shout out to her. She's out there talking to all the neighbors, you know, giving blessings to everyone. All the little babies love her.
Mm-hmm.
And she still sings. I think she's like in her 70s or something. She's still singing.
Wow.
Over at the Alberta Street Pub. She has shows every once in a while.
Nice.
She knows K-Boot. She knows, you know, she knows music.
Yeah.
Jazz singer. She has like all the record collections. She's really such an interesting lady.
Shout out to her.
Shout out to Shirley Nanette. We got April on the line.
Hi, April. Can you hear us?
Hi. Just fine. I was just inspired by the last caller. I knew Miss Gloria, and I miss that place so much. I went to, for one thing, it was, like you said, it was a Talking Drum bookstore and Reflections Coffee, and so you could sit there and read books, and I actually got introduced to Octavia Butler that way,
Ooh.
Which was a very good relationship, And I also attended a couple of, like one whole summer, we read a book and discussed each chapter in the back room. And that was a really neat group. So I didn't know Miss Gloria for very long, but I sure do miss that place. And I was really inspired by her and the books we read and all the people that we connected with. I think they really did create a lot of community there.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Hope she's listening. Maybe time to open up, do a pop-up or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope so, too. Shout out to Miss Gloria and happy International Women's Day.
Happy International Women's Day. Thanks for calling. So Reggie Bob was the person who originally called in, right, and was talking about Gloria. And I caught up with him because there is an exciting event coming up. The reunion that was teased months and months ago is actually happening this weekend. So let's talk to Bob.
Give me a 3-2-1 or just go.
3-2-1.
Hey, hello. This is K-Boo DJ radio show host, Reggae Bob. Hello.
Good to be talking to you, Reggae Bob. How are you?
I'm totally fine. Excited as can be. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Well, listen, we're talking to you because you called in to The Gap on our Women's Day show back in March when we were asking people about the women that we admire. Do you remember what you said?
Yes, I do. And I'm glad you asked. Yes. I mentioned a wonderful person who I worked for and I had the pleasure to know for years here in Portland, named Gloria McMurtry. And Gloria McMurtry is and was the owner-operator of Reflections Coffee Shop and Talking Drum Bookstore on Northeast Killingsworth in Portland, Oregon. Yes.
Tell me what you remember about Reflections Coffee Shop and Bookstore.
You betcha. Okay, so for me in Portland, you know, Reflections Coffee Shop started in 1995 and they closed in 2012. But for me, I was driving taxi cab from 2000 to 2020. And what happened was I would often have many, many customers going to and from that particular coffee shop and that particular bookstore. A lot of times they'd be coming from the airport. There'd be authors, dignitaries, artists, and just a wide array of folks, you know, and African-American folks, black people here in Portland. But the people coming to Reflections were people like Black Panther leader Eldridge Cleaver, and we had U.S. ambassadors, and we had science fiction writer Olivia Butler, I think is her last name, from Seattle, would come down.
Octavia Butler?
There you go. Thank you for fixing that. I'm not the best reader or author. I'm the driver that took people to and from these events. And I felt so good myself to being the driver. But one year, I actually lost my driver's license for not my fault, of course. And I had to find something to do for a year. And I wound up being a barista at Reflections Coffee Shop.
And what was that like, day to day?
Day to day was beautiful. What happened was, I got to be an employee of the Mecca of the black community here in Portland. You know, do the usual coffee things. You know, I wasn't a manager then. I was just an employee then. I became the manager like 8 years later. But as an employee, it was just so good to be there, learn how to make the drinks and the pastries set up, you know, open and close the business, and just being black and proud. Being black and proud, being a part of something that was thriving in the community, people going to and fro, and just, you know, it was just the greatest feeling. You know, I hate to say that they had to pay me because I did have to pay bills, but I almost would have done it for free, like volunteering a cable. Almost. Almost do it for free.
Well, you're not the only one that felt that way. On that Women's Day show that we did, other folks called in after you, other folks that were on the line after you shared these fond memories of the cafe and bookstore, talked about their experience as well. And again, this was back in March. What has been happening related to Reflections in the month since?
Oh my goodness! You know, I'm thank you for asking. I remember that those callers, because I remember hearing those callers after I hung up, and that's what it's all about. That's what KBOO is so special about when we talk about community. You know, so many things are happening these days with high tech, online. You know, post this, post that, but with a beautiful radio station, just have a radio and turn it on. But thank goodness they can listen around the world. But still, regular radio. Turn it on, and then you hear people call in that are either local or they could be further away, but they were live and spontaneous and not set up. And they started calling about it just warmed my heart. So, and I'm not sure if it was Tammy or you that mentioned that we should do a pop-up. We should have a little pop-up about Reflections. And sure enough, I spoke to the owner, Gloria McMurtry. She still lives here in Portland. She did the coffee shop. I spoke to my good friend and KBOO host, O.B. Hill, who does a show with others called Black Book Talk every first Thursday of the month. And they agreed. They said, hey, let's do the pop-up. Let's have a Reflections reunion. And we're doing that this Saturday, June 1st, at the Soul Restoration Center on Northeast Killingsworth and Williams.
That is so exciting. When you called to tell me that this was going to happen, that was, and Tammy as well, I'm speaking for her too. We were, you know, it's electrifying to get to make that connection.
Yes, because, you know, you can have an idea, and a lot of ideas don't, you know, come to fruition. That's my big word of the day, fruition. Yeah. And it's happening, and it's beautiful. And a lot of people are coming, you know, it's like a high school reunion type of thing, but like your 20-year reunion, because Reflections has been closed for 12 years. And oh my goodness, people are talking like it's a grand opening of a store. People are so excited. And for folks who can't make it, I want to make this announcement. Folks that can't make it, we are going to do it again and hopefully do something like every other month or something like that. But this is the first one, and it's the first unofficial event of Juneteenth, 2024. Yeah.
Love that. Well, what can people expect from this pop-up? What do you guys have planned?
Yeah, at the pop-up event, you know, it's going to be pretty much low-key. We're not going to do a big blowout. But we are going to have some poets, speakers and poets that were at Reflections back in the day. Mr. O.B. Hill, his daughter is an actual professional singer, Tony Hill. Hopefully she'll be able to come and do performing. Just a lot of, we're going to have pictures, a lot of pictures that were taken at Reflections back in the day. And we might have some, are you sitting down? VHS tapes that were events recorded at some of our events at Reflections, running on a loop. A lot of pictures, and we have pictures of folks we don't even know who they are. And we're going to be requesting folks, you know, can you identify this person? And then we'll do it like that. Little sneaky snacks, but we're going to have coffee. We're going to have coffee ready at 10 o'clock in the morning, just like we used to do.
That's awesome. Well, who is this event for?
The event is mostly for Gloria McMurtry, the Reflections Coffee Shop half, and the community, because O.B. Hill, bless his heart, our KBOO pioneer brother, he does a lot of events. He gets around town pretty good himself, but Gloria does not. And he really is requesting the event is more for Gloria than himself, because he's so great and humble. But we want people to come to see what Portland Black community used to be like, good, peaceful, loving. In the time I was there, there was only two fights in the coffee shop that I will share at the event. But man, it's just a beautiful reenactment and a beautiful gathering of us. Yes.
That's fantastic. I mean, I'm on the edge of my seat wanting to hear about all of this story and this history.
You'll have to be there. You got to be there to get the good stuff.
Well, can you tell me the details of the event one more time?
Oh, sure. It starts at 10 o'clock a.m. The address is 14 Northeast Killingsworth, and the actual venue is the beautiful place run by Dr. Renee Mitchell and her partner associate Sunshine Dixon, two beautiful people, and it's 14 Northeast Killingsworth is the address.
And what time is it going to be?
From 10 till 2. It's a little 4-hour event. And the name of the place is the Soul Restoration Center. Soul Restoration Center, where we're restoring soul in the community.
If our listeners are interested in finding out more, is there anything on the web that they could look up?
Yes, indeed. We got the wonderful old school Facebook. That's as far as I can go. Instagram and X is just too busy for me. So I got a beautiful Facebook page. Just look for Reflections Reunion, and it's on my page, Robert Hamilton, you know, a.k.a. DJ Reggae Bob, and people can come on down. It could be a crowd. If it gets overcrowded, there might be a line outside. We'll try to get everybody in to say hello. Gloria is 82 years old. Obie's 82 years old. They're beautiful people. We're not going to overdo them, but come on down as much as we can.
Do you have any final thoughts?
Final thoughts? No, just gratefulness. Grateful for KBOO. You know, one fun story I can share. When I was working at Reflections, I was still on the air at KBOO. I had to come down at noon. So I'd stop in the middle of the day, coffee shop, go down to KBOO, do my 2-hour show, noon to 2, and then back to the coffee shop. But gosh darn it, after four or five times, somewhere along the line, I lost my laptop computer. So I had to make a decision. So I had to quit my volunteer show at KBOO so I could make sure I kept the copy shop going. But we fixed everything since then. So, yeah.
Well, you have you want to mention your KBOO show? You do have one now.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Althea. I do. I'm on every other Tuesday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. It's called the Reggae Bobcast. And it's not a podcast. It's just a regular radio show, Reggae Bobcast. And I got my good friend DJ George, who comes on with me very often. And the first hour is community, soul, and funk. And then the second hour, 9 to 10, is reggae music. Because, of course, I do have to play. Because, yes, I am Reggae Bob. Yay!
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you making these connections, of course, and everything you do for KBOO and for the community. It's great to get to talk to you and to share this with the listeners.
Thank you, Althea. My pleasure. Thank you much. KBOO, yeah.
That was Reggae Bob. He is a KBOO programmer, longtime member of the community, and of course the person who was helping to make the connection between, you know, the interest that some of our callers talked about on our Women's Day show and this pop-up for Reflections Coffee Shop and Bookstore. The details for that, again, it is on Saturday, June 1st, from 10 to 2 at the Soul Restoration Center. It's the Reflections Reunion at the Soul Restoration Center at 14 Northeast Killingsworth in Portland. Thank you to everybody who called in on that original show. And, of course, thank you to Reggae Bob for expressing and helping to make that connection and then also sharing it with us today. We're going to take a quick musical break and we'll be back with more of The Gap after this.
I can't just spend my whole life on wondering.
You are listening to The Gap on KBOO Portland. I am your co-host, without a co-host today, Althea, and we are doing a pre-recorded program today. Regrettably, we're not live. I think we'll be back next week, so look forward to that. For this part of the program, we're going to be going back and revisiting an interview that I did with filmmaker Makosi Anita Tau back in February. This was such an incredible interview. It's such an incredible interview for me to think back on, and I'm really excited to revisit it with you, so I hope you enjoy. Today, it is my pleasure to have two interview guests here in the studio with me. They made the trek in the morning. I really appreciate it. I'm joined by Aviva McClure, the co-director of the Cascade Festival of African Films, and Makosi Anita Tau, a writer and award-winning filmmaker from Botswana whose short film, For Them That Pray, is showing at the film festival. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Althea.
How's your morning going so far?
It's very good. Just happy to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you. Well, Makosi, I want to talk about your short film, For Them That Pray, since this is an audio medium, P-R-E-Y. It's described as a psychological drama about a young woman in transit, perpetually harassed in a motel as she attempts to enjoy a simple night of sleep. Where did the idea for this film begin?
This film is a lived experience. And so I dabble a lot in memoir, fiction, filmmaking. So I draw from my experiences. And it came from one day I was on transit and I was in a hotel. And the rest of everything that you want to know about it is in the film.
Right. I don't want to spoil too much. But yeah, but coming from your experience, is that something that you do with most of your films or is that a unique thing to this short?
Yes, it is. I work towards privileging, you know, voices that have struggled with erasure, mm-hmm. with silence and with absence in cinema. And my films are usually a confrontation of situations, circumstances, even predators. And I make film to uncover the whole story because mm-hmm. often I used to make film from a place of, this is my story, this is my voice. But now I have a curiosity to understand what did happen, mm-hmm. what was in the mind of this person. And so being able to write these stories, to write these films, has given me the opportunity to investigate the other side of the story that goes untold. Mm-hmm. And it's been an opportunity for me to really understand, to have a deeper understanding. What we understand better, we're able to channel good to implement change. And mm-hmm. so that's my, yeah.
Yeah, well, you mentioned that there was a shift in your philosophy about that. When did that shift happen? Was there a particular inciting incident?
The shift happened when I wanted to be honest about my experiences and all the things I survived. Because I think I was quick to share the story about how I overcame bipolar mm-hmm. and how I got healed from that, and that's been my life testimony. But within that is also the survival of rape, you know, and I ignored that for a majority of my life, and I didn't want to confront it. So, and I still told stories about it. You know, I still tried to create an awareness around it. But it was when I started, you know, being committed to therapy that I was able to confront it on that level. And I think for a long time, I actually blamed myself and I didn't know that until I was made aware of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, there's one thing to know it, know what you're supposed to know, yeah. and then there's another thing to know actually and believe.
Yes.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, turning to your short film, what was the production process like for this? Were there different iterations of what you wanted to do?
So I'll just start here. I actually didn't want to make this film because I felt like I was alone. You know, I came from Botswana and I landed in Syracuse to pursue my MFA. And when I got there, I didn't meet any Motswana until, like, my second year, right? And so What happened was I kept looking for Botswana to cast in my film, because one of the things that I do with my work is I make space, I hold space for Botswana, and my work is to uncover the Botswana woman in cinema, because I've not seen myself in cinema. I've not seen my aunts, my uncles, my grandmothers, grandfathers. I've not seen them in cinema. And so I wanted a Botswana woman, and there was none to cast. So I, by default, ended up being the protagonist in the story. So I was literally living through what I went through again. And the way that it happened was in class with my then mentor. You know, she had to really pull me through to make the film. Like, I kept saying, I can't do that. But I ended up with a very supportive team and friends. And I think the greatest power of filmmaking is collaboration. And I didn't feel alone anymore. It was a majority of men on my set, and I think it worked to my advantage because I was trying to communicate something. And I think they were also able to come to a place of awareness of what it looks like to be a woman and to endure the things I've had to endure. So the process of making the film, the pre-production, was very collaborative, but I'm a director who likes, I like being on top of things. So the cinematic style of the film, the color was pre-decided. I had a test shoot done with a friend of mine who ended up editing the film. He was a very instrumental person in me being able to, you know, gather myself, because he also produced the film and he held me accountable the entire time. And I count him as a friend and an ally. And so it was good to have that support system. 80% of my crew was Asian. And then I had, it was me, and a few casts were women. And so I didn't have, my ideal set, my ideal team is women, which I was able to do with the film that I just recently completed. But with this one, I think it was very intentional. It was necessary to have them there. And they were holding space for me throughout the entirety of making the film. To be a performer in the film, to be an actor and a director, is a very difficult... To juggle that is very difficult. Right. But they made room for that. And, you know, with every shot, I would have a view of what we have. If I don't like it, we don't continue. And they'll give me room and space. And the actor's assistant I had on set, his name is Sam Asgandi, and he's from Iran. Oh, he was such a blessing to have on that set, because I could feel safe, like, talking to him about the way I felt, because I believe in debriefing. My process is very respective to... I respect people's mental health a lot, and I consider that. So I give people space and room to gather themselves, to process their feelings, and that was pivotal in being able to successfully make this film.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you mentioned, you're the director, the producer, the writer, and the star of this piece. And you touched on this a little bit, but I imagine there are a whole bunch of, like, micro-level and macro-level decisions you have to make in each of those roles. Can you give me some examples of, like, what that looks like? Because you're wearing so many hats.
Yes, I think the most important thing about, you know, being a director is honoring your vision, right? So, yes, I experienced it. I knew the feeling that I wanted to give my audience with it. I knew what I wanted it to look like. And this film literally digressed everything that I thought it would be. And I say this because initially, if I could, I would have shot this film in Ethiopia. That's where I would have shot it. Mm-hmm. I was looking for a cast that I did not find. Everyone in that cast really was... It was a blessing to have them, but that was not the initial where I started off. Mm-hmm. So everything just kept on. I had to adapt. You have to adapt, constantly adapt. And I was surprised, though, that while everything was like it really wasn't exactly what I intended in the beginning, it came out exactly what it was supposed to come out as. The same thing, the same feeling. The experience was like reliving it. And there's a scene there that you know, I think some people might think it's acting, but it's not. Like, it's so real. It's mm-hmm. so real to me. And I had to make an executive decision in the edit process, because now you have all this information, all this data, and you have to string it together to, okay, how then does it become a story? So working with collaborators gets to a point where sometimes their voice can be a bit overpowering.
Sure.
And I've been given the grace to listen. I give people space to speak. I listen. And then I process, and then I see what to do. So we were at odds. There was a specific scene we shot. It was a long shot, and it was maybe like 3 minutes long. That wasn't going to happen. That would have made the film maybe 18 minutes. So we had to cut that up. And the process that my editor wanted was more experimental. And I was like, no, we're not going that direction. This is how I would prefer it. So I gave him, I said, we're going to do two things. You're going to come up with your version. I'm going to do mine. And then we'll sit down, we'll watch.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then we did that. Then we took a break. We had to take an edit break. We took maybe like a month or two. We came back and then we had a discussion. Okay, how do you feel about mine? Well, I think it's okay. It works. How do you think about mine? Okay, I see. So we got to a point where I had to hold true to my vision, because I am the one who experienced this. I know what happened, but I was open. You know, you still have to be open, because collaboration is not dictatorship. Collaboration is being open to the ideas of others, and where they can be successful, you have to accept it, and you have to make space for that. And I use a feminist approach to filmmaking, which is inclusive of all ideas. And it's important that everyone who, you know, has something to say, something to offer, knows and feels that my idea is being accepted, it's being appreciated. And so while I hold space at the end of the day, if at the very beginning the idea, the vision has been communicated, our role as creators, as makers, is to honor that. Regardless of even how I feel as a director, especially as a writer, because when you write, you're in a different space.
Right.
When you direct, you're in a different space.
Mm-hmm.
I love what you said about collaboration. I think that applies to so many different things, and some people need to hear it. Well, in the short film, one of the things I really took note of was the sound design. Obviously, I'm a radio person, so I'm a little bit of like a nerd about that kind of thing. But the sound design and all the different elements of the film kind of build on top of each other to create that sense of uneasiness, the ambient threat that the main character and the audience feel. I mean, it is. I was like, oh, I know what's going on. I can tell what's happening right now. But there's a moment at the end that takes you right back to kind of the start of the film, and you're left with this feeling of this like cyclical nature of it all. Are there certain aspects of storytelling through film that you are drawn to when you're exploring this kind of a subject? I mean, you mentioned that, you know, a more experimental editing kind of thing wasn't fitting with how you wanted to create.
I think for me, I'll just explain it this way. And you said the word that I usually use to, you know, to articulate this, which is the cyclical nature of abuse.
Mm.
And one thing I've received in conversations with many women is just how repetitive rape is. It doesn't happen just once. I think for the women I've spoken to, so some of the survivors I've spoken to, it's something that happens. It happens again, right? And that's what I wanted to explore. So I thought about, okay, in what way can I show this without saying anything, right? And when we went location scouting, I was with my editor, who's also my producer and my friend. When we went location scouting and, you know, we toured around 4 or 5 motels, they weren't it. But when I went to the specific motel, there was a staircase. And for me, staircases represent many things. Transitions, they're a pedestal, and they're a way of lifting. But there's also, you know, the aspect of walking through, walking into, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I emphasize in my work is making room for the silent and small voice. And so I was using this as a metaphorical a way of expressing how you know, I'm lifting the voices of women and underrepresented minorities, and I was using the visual aspect of repetition, mm-hmm. right? But through different bodies to show that it's the same thing. We're literally living the same story. It's just showing up differently. There is a line in one of my poems where I say, you know, we keep hearing the same song with different people clapping, but nobody is taking off their headphones. Mm. So it's like we keep saying it, shouting it out, trying to express ourselves, trying not to be silent, but people still have earmuffs on. Mm-hmm. People still don't want to listen. And so I used repetition. I used the same frame to show that it's not the same woman, but it's many women who keep enduring and who keep going through. And I asked different, the women that I asked to come on and be a part of this film experienced it. You know, they were so empowered to be able to, you know, put something to the table mm-hmm. and to stand up for what they believed in. And so for me, to be able to go through that process of, it's just location scouting, there's the stairs, what do these stairs mean to me? There's a metaphorical aspect of, okay, this is the language I want to use to communicate. Okay, now let's look at the casting. How do I find these women? Mm-hmm. And the conversations, in conversation when you're casting, you'll hear it, you'll see it, you'll feel it, right? Mm. And then we go through, okay, let's make decisions about the color. I want red. Why do you want red? Because blood. Mm. The sheets were bloody. Mm-hmm. You know, everything is tied to experience. Mm-hmm. Everything is tied to symbolism. But one of the things I also want to mention is that culturally, everyone has a specific and unique approach to interpretation because of the cultural context and where mm-hmm. I'm from. So I'm from Botswana. I went to school in South Africa and then I came to the US, right? But I have been exposed to the cultures from maybe Ghana, Namibia, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Ethiopia. So it allowed me to think and to sit and say, okay, what could be accepted globally for what I want to say that is mm-hmm. so personal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even with the sound design, in fact, everything that pieces in the film that are from Botswana, the image of the Mashatu vulture that you see there is a photograph by a friend of mine. Her name is Tepo Pokoja, and she's from Botswana. And the audio flashback that you hear was by a classmate of mine. We went to film school together, and I asked him, I need your help, go to the studio in Botswana, record this for me, and I want to incorporate it into the film. I carry pieces of myself in my film. Mm-hmm. And even my mom, I directed my mom from Syracuse. She was in Botswana, and she would get into a closet and record, and then send. I'll be like, Mom, no, let's go over it again. We had to do it over Zoom, because I'm still carrying pieces of myself into it. Yeah. So every decision is, this is how I view the world. This is my perspective. Mm-hmm. But that is still within the context of collaboration, still within the context of how do we tell a story by a Motswana woman mm-hmm. cinematically, someone who cinema has not held space for them. Mm-hmm. And culturally, sometimes people might not understand what she's communicating. I've been told, like, there's so many things that you'll notice even within the story, like in terms of dialogue. I love your accent. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's so much that I was trying to say with this one film, and some of it was empowering to see it actually tangible. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
Now you're saying all that, and I'm eager to watch it again, because you've got my gears turning about, you know, the how deliberate all of those choices were, and thinking about the stairs, and now I'm thinking about, oh well, the eye of the camera is mm-hmm. at ground level and the stairs are going down, mm-hmm. and that's where we see people emerging from. It's I want to watch it again now that I've heard you talk about it. Well, you're sort of a multimedia person, right? Yes. You explore in a lot of different venues. When you find yourself inspired by a new idea, does that come with an understanding of the medium that you want to explore it in? Is it, do you know that it's going to be a piece of writing? Do you know that you want to make a short film?
Mm. I think that's been both a challenge and a blessing. I've had situations where I recently came back from an artist residency program. I went to the Headlands in San Francisco, and I went there to write my first feature film. And when I got there, I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna be open to whatever happens to me. And I hadn't written poetry in a long time. I hadn't written short stories in a long time. My focus had just been on graduating, getting out of school, and settling myself into this next thing. So I started off with poetry. And that is something that I've done from the age of 9. I was published since the age of 9. Mm. And then I transitioned from the poetry, and then I wrote a short story. And then I started, I was transcribing the interviews that I did, because I'm also writing my memoir. But I think the main takeaway from this is that I'm still saying the same thing through all these mediums. I've been an advocate for mental health, for women, for gender equality, for gender-based violence. I've been an advocate since I can remember, from the work I've been doing. And you know, because it's so personal, I allow my art to take the shape of what it wants to. The art directs itself. So my source is God. And when God gives me an idea, it can be visions, dreams. I allow whatever he gives me to be translated through the tools and mediums that he wants. So there's a lot of liberty there in that. But at the end of the day, I'm holding so much. There's so much I'm carrying. And sometimes I get to a place where I don't know how to, like, how do I get this out there, right? Because I have poems. I've thought about poems that I can turn into films. I've thought about, like, some of the films I've already shot, I can develop them into features, into series. And I'm what, 35? So I still have a long way to go. And I didn't think that way before. Mm. I always came from a place of, I better do this now, I have to do it now. There might not be a tomorrow to do it in. And that was coming from a place of, you know, my life story and what I went through, and having lost my scholarship, having had to do a lot to recover the years that I lost in my life. And that recovery process looked like, okay, now I have it together, now I'm healed, so now I have to get everything all at the same time. So I was rushing through life. I was trying my best to get everything done. Mm-hmm. And I was so hard on myself, because I thought this message needs to come out right now. And only after I graduated, that's when I realized, you know what, there is room for everything. And every time that, you know, you feel that way, just know that the rushing time is over. Like, it's I don't need to rush anymore, because I'm safe. You know, I think that I think that's what's been an issue for me. Mm-hmm. And being able to feel safe and to have my ideas accepted and supported the way that they are. I think America for me has done a good job at supporting me. Mm-hmm. It has. I've felt supported here, and I feel like I'm not creating from a place of, the urgency that I have is not from a place of fear. Mm-hmm. It's from a place of, this will be said.
Right.
This will be accepted. This will be understood. And the time for it is going to unravel itself. I don't have to fight time to tell these stories. Time itself will present opportunities, and the stories will be told.
Yeah. What a wonderful explanation. Patience is incredibly important, and so difficult to hold on to when you have something to say. Yeah. Well, I want to turn to you, Aviva. You're the festival co-director. What drew you to Makosi's short film?
You know, first of all, thank you for explaining just your behind the scenes, because this is really the first time I've been able to hear all of that. And it, Althea, your question is great, because I think what I'm hearing in Makosi's description is also an openness that women of all experiences and all cultures can find an inroad. So for me, there are scenes where, you know, even being light-skinned, mixed, I've been in spaces where I have felt similarly, you know, where I'm like, oh, bracing myself. We've talked about that just this morning. Sometimes going into a space and being like, okay, put on your armor, girl. Here we go, you know. And I think in Portland, the story is so relevant for a lot of those cultural pieces, because there is a lot that a Black woman in Portland needs to check at the door when entering a space. And so I think that there are many themes that I relate to, including SA and you know, some of those global struggles that women together are dealing with. So in that way, I think I just found, you know, even though sometimes the story is hard, when you see your story reflected, it feels comforting. It feels like home. Mm-hmm. So, you know, across the country, you know, already feeling this connection with Makosi, and then of course just hearing her story unfold in the last week, and then in the next 2 days that she's with us at the festival, is such a gift.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Mm. Thank you.
Well, a question for both of you then, specifically talking about the film festival. What do you hope audiences take away from the experience, either with your short film specifically or the film festival more broadly?
I believe that, you know, I was telling Aviva the other day when I arrived that it's so rare to see the experiences of a Motswana woman from the lens of a Motswana director.
Mm-hmm.
And this is because Africa has always been clumped into this monolith, and it's almost as though there's no expectation that there's people of different identities, beliefs, and culture within Africa. And I think what this festival is doing is that it's demystifying that that complex, that idea of it being a monolith. And so it's giving audiences the opportunity to look at life through the lens of whomever it is that has been given the platform to showcase. And, you know, when we think about Africa and maybe African cinema, there's industries that we veer more towards. And so for me to be here, I consider it a privilege and an opportunity to represent my country, to represent who I am, you know, and to be able to tell the story of a Motswana woman. You know, I think that the doors had been closed for a long time, and just making space for this voice is making it's making space for a nation. It's not just making space for me, but I'm carrying my mother, I'm carrying my grandmother, I'm carrying the women of Botswana, I am carrying the young girls, the young boys, I'm carrying all of my people on my back.
Mm-hmm.
And the world gets to see that.
Mm.
And so this opportunity for me to be here, to be present and to engage with the audience is empowering in that sense that we then get to get into dialogue. Okay, so we've seen your film. What's the next step for you? Where can we see more of your work? Because you're building relationships. My audiences for me are relationships. You know, it's not, or you just be on the receiving end. I love to hear what people think about my work. I love to think about it because it tells me what they think about my people. And for them to be in a place to appreciate my people, because I have not seen that. I've not been exposed to that. It's so empowering. It's life-changing. It's life-changing. I didn't think, there's so many things that have fought against me in my life, and having struggled with, you know, bipolar for 3 years, having been sick, when I thought my life was over. I thought there could be nothing good that would come out of me. and the restoration that's happened after that, the recovery from that, I have nothing to lose by putting my people's stories out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just an honor to be able to have an audience even.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Aviva, for the festival more broadly, what do you hope folks take away?
Yeah, just underscoring that, you know, importance of people telling their own stories. And for a long time, throughout the continent of Africa and Africa, you know, we've had Western storytellers telling African stories, which has its bias, right? So I think that a big part of why our festival is free and open to the public is because we want to create the channels for Africans of all nations to be able to tell their own stories, say their names, bring their you know, ancestors into the space. And in the ways that I've been involved in the festival, I first was an audience member for many years. My son has grown up with African cinema, and I've seen through my own child resilience come through those stories. So I think there is this aspect of intellectual knowledge that we get from the films, but there's also a heart knowledge that we get when we familiarize ourselves with Africa and her people.
Mm-hmm. This has been such a rich conversation. I feel like we could go the whole hour, but in the interest of preserving your time, where can folks find out more information both about the festival and if they want to follow up with you, Makosi?
So if you'd like to engage with me and speak to me, I am on Facebook. It's MAKGOSI, and then Anita, and then TAU, Tau. I am also on Instagram, at Makosi Anita. I am also on... Oh, no, I'm not going to give up TikTok. But, yeah, I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. On Instagram, if you want to email me, it's makosibookings@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up? Anything you wanted to mention?
I just want to say, you know, Althea, thank you so much, and Tammy, too. I know you're listening. We are just so grateful for this partnership with KABU, and we share many, many people in our audiences and in even the tech side, the behind-the-scenes side. We just share a lot of folks who really are committed to making sure that Portlanders have a broader perspective from around the world. So thank you. That's really all I just wanted to say. Thanks.
Yeah, I just want to, you know, express my gratitude to, you know, Aviva and Eugenie and to the whole committee,
mm-hmm.
That puts this festival together. Like, you know, to find a place where all my intersections are valued, accepted, and appreciated has been such a struggle. But here I am, and my voice is, you know, being given the space. So I really appreciate you on behalf of Makosi, on behalf of Botswana, on behalf of Africa, and on behalf of Black women filmmakers. This is our time, and we are grateful. And I also just want to thank you, Althea, for this time that you have given us. And just the time, you know, time is a gift, and to spend it with us is a blessing to me. Thank you for giving us this conversation. It's enriching. And it's empowering. You know, the more you hear something, the more you believe it.
Mm.
And so I have this line where I say, I will say it as much as I can so that I can believe it.
Mm.
And I want to believe that everything that has been reiterated here is sitting, it's seeping through my heart.
Yeah.
And I'm really grateful. Thank you.
I appreciate you both so much. I'm going back to watch the film again after this. I'm going to re-listen to all of it. Like, this has been really wonderful. Thank you both so much for being here. That was filmmaker Makosi Anita Tau and, of course, the director of the Cascade Festival of African Films, Aviva McClure, speaking with me back in February. thank you so much for taking this little trip down memory lane with me. Of course, we've been talking about Mikosi's films and her filmmaking process. But before that, we talked to Reggae Bob, a KBOO programmer who helped sort of catalyze something on our show back in March on our Women's Day program, talking about his admiration for Gloria McMurtry, the person who was in charge of Reflections Cafe and Bookstore. After 12 years of closure, there is actually a reunion pop-up that's happening this weekend. I wanted to make mention of it one more time. It's going to be on Saturday, June 1st at the Soul Restoration Center from 10 to 2. That address again is 14 Northeast Killingsworth. What a great opportunity to kind of see that come full circle. KBOO community making it happen. I want to thank you so much for listening for a little bit of an odd episode. I want to shout out my normal co-host, Tammy. Hi, Tammy. I miss you. And thank you to our regular board op, Sherry, who got the morning off. Hopefully you got to sleep in today, Sherry. I hope that that's what ended up happening. But anyway, thank you all so much for listening to the show. There wasn't a call-in segment today, but of course you can connect with us online. We would love to hear from you. You can email us. The email address is thegapradio@gmail.com. And you can also message us on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is @thegapradio. I'd love to hear, you know, what you're up to, what you're thinking about doing this weekend. If you're going, I would love to know. And of course, yeah, stay in the loop with us. And thank you so much for listening to KBOO, for choosing KBOO Community Radio, your community connection, making it happen. You know, this is what we do it for. This has been The Gap. I've been Althea Billings. Stay tuned now. Coming up, it's Arab Voices. We'll see you next week.
This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
The month of June is Pride Month, an opportunity